Okay, we're beginning here on the third line on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara begins, Amar Rav Ashi Machloket Bipri Rishon, Aval Bipri Sheni Divrei Hakol, Ben Derech Mekach, Ben Derech Chilul. So this references back to the Machloket that we saw between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar about the ability to transfer the Kedusha of Shvi'it. Over there we saw that Rabbi Elazar said, Ein Shvi'it Mitchalelet Ela Derech Mekach, and Rabbi Yochanan said, Ben Derech Mekach, Ben Derech Chilul. So they have a Machloket about the transference of Kedusha. Rav Ashi now relegates their Machloket to Pre-Rishon. That means that only in the first transaction or transference of Kedusha, that means from the core Perut Shvi'it themselves, onto whatever item that you're trying to transfer that Kedusha. There, Rabbi Elazar says, it only works Derech Mekach. And Rabbi Yochanan says it works Derech Mekach or Derech Chilul. But Pre-Sheni, after that point in time, if you're transferring from the object that the Kedusha was transferred onto, then it doesn't matter. Divrei Hakol, ben derech mekach, ben derech chilul. Whichever way then you transfer the Kedusha from that point forward, it doesn't matter. Mar says, Vaktani lakach, lakach. In the Braita that we brought to support Rabbi Elazar's opinion, over there in the Braita, it says, Haketzat. And it goes through a list of items, and each one of those items talks about a transaction. It's not just a transaction from the core Perot Shvi'it onto the first item, but even when it passes from each of those items that it moves through, whether it's from Dagim to Yayin to Shemen, all those items, it uses the word Lakach over and over again. If you're right about the fact that it doesn't matter after the first transaction, why is the bright the Makbi to use the term of Lakach from that point forward? So when it says, that's not a problem, I did the Tana Reisha Lakach, Tana Nami Seimu Lakach. The truth is that in the first transaction, according to Rabbi Elazar, it has to be mekach. It has to be a case of purchase in order to transfer the Kedusha. And so because of that, the Braita continued along that theme. It's not because after that point in time that only mekach or memkar schora would work, but because it started the Braita using the word lakach, it continued to use the word lakach throughout the Braita, even though it wasn't necessary after the first transaction. Etve Ravina, the Ravashi, so Ravina challenges Ravashi's narrowing of this machloket. Mishesh lo sela shel shvi'it. The person who has a coin that has demei shvi'it on it. Ubikesh lekach bo chaluk. And he wants to buy a garment with it, which is not allowed. It's not permissible to use demei shvi'it to purchase a garment. Rashi the Shitato says the problem here is, that Torah amra lachla betoch hazman, vega zem mitgayim l'shana haba. Rashi, as we saw before, with regard to Schora and Perot Shvi'it, says the problem is that you have to finish the Perot Shvi'it or the Dmei Shvi'it within Shvi'it itself before the Zman HaBiur. If you buy a piece of clothing or garment with it, that will last beyond the time period of the Biur. And therefore, it's a violation of Lo'ochla that it be consumed or utilized in the year of Shvi'it by buying the clothing. Again, others would suggest that the problem is simply is a Lo'ochla. You have to eat it, and you can't use it for items that are not Hana'atan ubi'uran shaveh. But here, you're not permitted to buy the chaluk with the money, so what do? Ketzad yaseh. Yelech etzel chanvani aragil etzlo. You go to the storekeeper, the supermarket, where they usually shop. Vomerlo, he says to the owner, tenli besela perot. He says, let me exchange this sela on fruits that you have there. So this is a purchase, derach mekach. And he purchases the fruits. By purchasing the fruits, the Dmei Shvi'it that are on the coin now transfer to the fruits, and the coin goes out to Chulin. Benotein lo, and then he gives it to him. V'chozer v'omer lo, harei periut alalu netunim lecha b'matana. Then he says, back to the storekeeper, here, I'm giving you these fruits, vegetables, what I just purchased, I'm giving them back to you as a gift. V'omer lo, and the storekeeper says to him, halacha helacha selezu b'matana. And the storekeeper says, back to him here, take this coin as a gift. And now the coin, which is chulin, he gets it back and can do whatever he likes with it. Obviously, we're talking about a second derivative of Kedushat Shvi'it, because we're talking about a coin. A coin that has Demei Shvi'it on it isn't the pre-Rishon, because it can't be a pre-Rishon. It's not Perot Shvi'it. So it has Demei Shvi'it, then we're already on a second level, a second derivative of Kedusha. And yet, the Braita over here makes a suggestion that the only solution to the problem is to go and purchase it from the chenvani. If you thought you could do a derech chilul, then you would just take your own fruits and you'd exchange the Dmei Shvi'it, Kedushat Shvi'it, onto your own fruits. You wouldn't have to go to the chenvani in order to do that. So that makes it clear here that even when we have Kedusha that's after the pre-Rishon, there is a daya out there that believes that you can only do a derech schora derech mekach u'memkar, and not derech chilul. V'ktani derech mekach in, derech chilul lo. And it says mekach works, chilul does not. That seems to indicate that Rabbi Elazar, or somebody who holds like him, believes that it's not divrei akol, that there is still a requirement of mekach even after pre-rishon. So now we amend Ravashi's statement of the narrowing of the machloket to this. Machloket bepri sheni. The machloket between Rav Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan is only when you reach second level kedusha, once the kedusha has passed from the original perot shvit onto whatever item it is. Aval bepri rishon, the perot shvit themselves, divrei akol derech mekach in, derech chilul lo. Everybody agrees then that it's derech mekach works, derech chilul does not. So everybody agrees to Rabbi Elazar's opinion when it comes to the perot shvit themselves. When it comes to Peirot, after that, whenever you transfer the Kedusha onto, from that point forward, that's where you have the Machloket Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar says that you have to continue to use Derech Mekach, just like you did by the first fruit. And Rabbi Yochanan says only for the first transference do you need to have Derech Mekach, but after that point in time, it can be done Derech Chilul. My says, Vaktani, and the bright that we brought in favor of Rabbi Yochanan says, Echad Shvi'it, Ve'echad Maiser Sheni. There's a parallel drawn between Shvi'it and Maiser Sheni. So that braita draws an equation between Shvi'it and Maisur Sheni. And in drawing that equation, it seems to indicate that Shvi'it, anything in Kedushat Shvi'it, acts like Maisur Sheni, which means you can do it Derech Chilul. So when it says, no, my Shvi'it over there is not Shvi'it of core payroll Shvi'it, rather, Demei Shvi'it. It's monies of Shvi'it. Tilo Te Mahochi, if you don't say this, Maser Maser Mamash, you think that braita is talking about Maiser Sheni literally? Faktiv. The only way you can transfer Kedusha with regards to Maiser Sheni is Vitzarta Kesef B'Yadecha, that you have to put it onto coins. The only way to take Kedusha Maiser Sheni off the Perot and transfer that Kedusha is to transfer it onto money. There's a requirement of Vitzarta Kesef B'Yadecha, and the Gemara learns from that has to be something with a Tzura. It has to be a coin, a minted coin, in order to transfer the Kedusha. So there, with that bright, they're talking about transferring some Kedusha, it had to move to the money, and then from the money onto these other objects that you're purchasing with it. But it's clear here that we're talking about Dmei Maiser Sheni as well, and Dmei Shvi'it. Ela Dmei Maiser Hachanami Dmei Shvi'it. So that already makes it second level of Kedusha. And that's where Rabbi Ashi agrees that Rabbi Yochanan argues. And he says Chilul works. For the first level of Kedusha from Perot Shvi'it themselves, Rabbi Yochanan's gonna agree that you have to do that Derech Mekach. But after that point in time, he's gonna say you can do it Derech Chilul. And that's proven by this braita that compares it to Maiser Sheni. Because by Maiser Sheni, if you're purchasing objects, it's clearly already Dmei Maiser Sheni, not Maiser Sheni itself, because you wouldn't be allowed to purchase items with Maiser Sheni itself. It has to only be transferred the Kedusha to a coin, and then from the coin onto these other objects. So we're talking about Dmei Maiser Sheni, we're also talking about Dmei Shvi'it. Right now, the Gemara continues with the Mishnah. Brishona ya lulav nital b'migdash shiv'a u'b'midina yom echad. Originally, the halacha min haTorah is that lulav is taking the mikdash for all 7 days, and that's because of the tail end of the pasuk, which says "V'samachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivat yamim," that there's simcha before Hashem for 7 days, and the Gemara dashes lifnei Hashem means literally lifnei Hashem in the mikdash. In the mikdash, there's a simcha of 7 days, and the lulav is taken for the 7 days, whereas in the medina, outside of the Mikdash and the Gvulin, it's only taken for 1 day, the first day Midoraita, because it says, V'lakachem lechem b'yom ha-rishon. So the Yom ha-rishon is the only day min ha-Torah for the Gvulin. As Rashi points out, Medina means anywhere outside the Mikdash. Even in Yerushalayim, it's considered to be outside of the Mikdash, and it's a din of only Yom Rishon and not the other days. That's Neged the Rambam. The Rambam in Perish HaMishnayot, in a number of places, including here and by Shofar, notes that when it talks about but Mikdash doesn't literally mean in the Mikdash, but it means in the area or sphere influence of the Mikdash, which includes Yerushalayim. And according to the Rambam, Yerushalayim is included in these dinim of taking lulav and of shofar, all of these things that take place with regards to dinim of Mikdash. So shofar that's blown on Shabbat is blown all in Yerushalayim, according to the Rambam. And a lulav that is taken in the Mikdash for 7 days, according to the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnayot, is taken for all 7 days inside of Yerushalayim. That's why people today are makpid if during Chol HaMoed Sukkot they go into Yerushalayim, that they actually are benching on the lulav another time. They take the lulav when they're inside of Yerushalayim to be choshesh l'shita the Rambam. Because when you did it outside in the morning, outside of Yerushalayim, you're only doing something that's a din derabonon. But once you reach Yerushalayim, according to the Rambam, that might be a din d'oraita of the Shiva'at Yamim. But that was the original idea. Now, Mishaharab Beit HaMikdash, after Mikdash was destroyed, Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Sheilulam Nital B'Medina Shiva Zecha LeMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai put in place a takana that the lulav should be taken all 7 days outside of the Mikdash, Zecha LeMikdash. Since there will no longer be a Mikdash there, so no longer will the lulav be taken for 7 days. That whole halacha will go by the wayside unless we do something to remember it. So Zecha LeMikdash, we take it in the Medina all 7 days. The first day Midoraita, the subsequent 6 days, if I'm a takanat chachamim, that Zecha LeMikdash, we take it for all 7 days. And the other item that he was mitakein, which is Shei Noam Hanef Kulo Asur, that the entire day of the 16th of Nisan, on which the Omer is brought to be matir, the new grains, that entire day will be Asur. You can't eat Chadash on the entire day of the 16th until the day of the 17th. Now the Gemara says, Menolon, Dabdinan Zecha LeMikdash. How do you know that you do something Zecha LeMikdash? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai takes it for granted that we're allowed to establish Dinei Derabanan to make a Zecha LeMikdash, to remember the Mikdash. How do you know there's a demand by Hashem or by the Torah to do things that are Zecha LeMikdash? So they cite Amar Kroah, they cite a Pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Ki Aaleh Aruch Alach. This is one of the small portions of Yirmiyahu that's actually a Nechama, that in the future Hashem will take us back and things will go well. And it says, Ki Aaleh Aruch Alach. I will have brought a cure to you. And I will cure you or heal you from your wounds. Num Hashem says, Hashem ki nidacha karulach. Because they call you the one who has been discarded. Tzion hi, doreshein la. They're part of Tzion. Nobody cares about that anymore. Doreshein la. Nobody cares about it. Michal debayi drisho. That comes to teach you that someone should care about it. The fact that the Pasuk says, or the people will say about the Jews, that nobody cares about Tzion anymore, indicates that somebody should care about Tzion. And who better to care about Tzion, of course, than the Jews? So that's what it means, that you have to do Zecha LeMikdash, that there is a demand upon us not to forget Yerushalayim, not to let Tzion go by the wayside, but rather to do things that are Zecha LeMikdash, Zecha to the glory of the Yerushalayim and Mikdash, B'binyana. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has been talking many things that are Zecha LeMikdash. In our Mishnah, we have two items. In the Mishnayot, in Rosh Hashanah, he has two or three items. But then we find throughout Shas that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has been talking many things. And here we have two of those items, as Tosafot points out. Maybe these were said on the same day or done on the same day, and therefore the Mishnah groups them together. We said here, the 16th of Nisan, where they bring the Omer, that entire day will be Asur. After Churban HaBayit, the entire day will be Asur. My time. Why is that the case? Mehero Yibane Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash, please God, will be rebuilt speedily in our times. V'yomru. Eshtakad. They'll say, last year, Milo Achlalnu Behira Mizrach. Didn't we eat as soon as the light started in the eastern sky, meaning at dawn or at sunrise? On the 16th, we began to eat Chadash. Hashanami Necho. So too this year, we should also begin at that point in time. Ve'inu lo yaday, de'ishtaka de'lo avi Beit HaMikdash. Because last year there was no Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, the threshold for when you're allowed to eat Chadash is Heir Mizrach. So therefore, what he tier? Hashta de'ika Beit HaMikdash. This year that we had the Beit HaMikdash, Omer Matir. The Omer would be the Matir. So this is based on a stira in the Psukim. It's in one pasuk it says, Ad Yaviyachem et Omer Natufa. That you're not allowed to eat the Chadash until you bring the Omer. And then there's another pasuk that says, Ad etzem ayom hazeh, that you're not allowed to have the chadash until the middle of this day. Etzem ayom hazeh doesn't mean literally the middle of the day, but rather itzumo shel yom, till the day itself, the core day itself. So the Gemara resolves the stira between these two psukim and says, when the Beit HaMikdash is extant, then it's ad haviyachem et omer. Until you bring the omer, then chadash is asur. But when the Beit HaMikdash is bechur bano, is destroyed, then the other pasuk kicks in, which is ad etzem ayom hazeh, ad itzumo shel yom, until you reach the day. So that means when there is no Beit HaMikdash, Chadash is mutar as soon as you hit the day of the 16th. That means on the morning of the 16th, as soon as you get there, mutar. Whereas in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, you'd have to wait until the Omer. So that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's fear. Last year, meaning before the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, like in our time today, we ate the Chadash as soon as the morning broke, because that was when there was no Beit HaMikdash. This year, all of a sudden, there's a Beit HaMikdash. You can't eat when the sun rises. Can't eat when it breaks dawn on the 16th. You have to wait for the Hakravat Omer. So people won't be used to that. So how do we rectify that situation? We'll make it that Zeichah the Mikdash, that the kol day of the 16th will be asur. So now the Gemara asks, wait, exactly what are you worried about here? Divnei Eimat, when was the Beit HaMikdash built? Ilem Divnei B'Shitzar, if it was built on the 16th itself, or Hiter Heri Mizrach, it was already mutar when the dawn broke on the 16th, because the Mikdash was not yet ready, and you couldn't bring the Omer, so that means it's based on the old system, which is that as soon as dawn breaks, it would be fine. Ela Divnei B'Chamish Sasar, it was built on the 15th, Mechatzot Yom Ulahalan Tishtere. So if it was built on the 15th, and they're going to bring the Omer on the 16th, then from Chatzot and onwards, it should be fine. That's none. We have a Mishnah. HaRechokim Mutarim Mechatzot Yom Ulahalan. During the time of the Beit Mikdash, those people that were not close to the Mikdash could start eating Chadash already from midday and onwards. The fish ain't Beit Din Mitatzelin Bo, because Beit Din is never Mitatzel, too lazy or not prepared to take care of the Omer. They always take care of the Omer by Chatzot Yom. So you can rely on that chazakah for people who are not near the Mikdash and say that we can eat chadash from chatzot and onwards. So why is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai being goes there for the whole day to be asur? He could just say half the day until chatzot will be asur, and then he would cover his bases. Lo tzricha de ivne belelya. It was built at night, meaning on the night of the 16th. So it's there by the morning of the 16th. It's already ready. So you'd have to bring the omer. O inami san chumoch l'shkiyat hachama. Or right by sunset. Rashi claims it's the sunset before the 16th, on the 15th, right by sunset. And since the Hakravat Omer is a big undertaking, Beit Din will not have enough time in order to prepare the Omer and have it done by Chatzot. So that's our fear. Tosafot says it's Samoch L'Shkia, means before the 15th, on the 14th, close to Shkia. And then they have Yom Tov, because 15th is Pesach. So you won't have time to go and check the fields and get what you need. And also there'll be a delay in bringing of the Omer. Rashi and Tosafot ask the question over here. Wait a minute. What's going on over here? First of all, we have the Gemara in Shavuot that says clearly there is no Binyan Beit HaMikdash at night. And second of all, there's no Binyan Beit HaMikdash on Yom Tov. Over here, the Gemara's suggestion is both of those. Both they can be built at night, as well as the fact that it can be built on Yom Tov itself. So how is that possible? So Rashi and Tosafot give the same answer, which is Yistarech L'Chalek. There's a difference between Binyan Beit HaMikdash Bidei Adam. There's a difference between a human-made Beit HaMikdash, which is asur to be made on Yom Tov, asur to be made at night, versus a Binyan Beit HaMikdash that comes, Atid Lavo, in the hands of Hashem. That's what Rashi says over here. About Mikdash Atid, Shanu Mitzapim, Banui Umushuchwal Hu Yigle, V'Yavo Mishamayim, that the Binyan Beit HaShlishi, which we look forward to, is going to come fully made, Min HaShamayim, and come down. So based on that, there's no problem, because when Hashem does it, there's no problem of Yom Tov, there's no problem of night. Now this is a somewhat difficult answer, because the Gemara in Shavuot does not answer that, and the Gemara in Shavuot asks the question, how could they build it on Yom Tov? How could they build it at night? The Rishonim give different answers to this question, but the most likely answer to the question is that this is Machloket HaSugiyot, which actually manifests itself in a Machloket HaRishonim about the Binyan Bayit Shlishi, how the Binyan Beit HaMikdash is going to happen. Is the Binyan Beit HaMishlishi going to be Bidei Adam? It's going to be done by the hands of man. And therefore, all the problems that arise in the Gemara and Shavuot are real issues, because it's going to be built by human beings. Or is the Binyan Beit HaShlishi going to be Bidei Shamayim, by the hands of heaven? And if that's the case, then these problems are not an issue. So over here, the Gemara and Sukkah seems to be following that opinion that says that the Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaShlishi, will be Bidei Shamayim. And therefore, they're going to ask all these questions, because it's not an issue. Whereas the Gemara in Shavuot and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah also has trappings of this as well. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Pesachim also has trappings of this as well, which is that in those, according to those sugyot, it's built Bidei Adam. And since it's built Bidei Adam, there's a problem with nighttime, there's a problem with Yom Tov, there's a problem with Shabbat, all the other issues that arise. And that manifests itself in Machloket Rishonim as well, as to how the third Beit HaMikdash is going to come. Is the third Beit HaMikdash going to come Bidei Shamayim? Or is the third Beit HaMikdash going to come Bidei Adam? And that machloket actually has ramifications for the Nachem that we say on Tisha B'Av. Because if you look at the Nachem that we say on Tisha B'Av, it says that just like Be'esh, that it was destroyed, the Mikdash was destroyed Be'esh, so too Adi Lavo Be'esh Nivnita is going to be built Be'esh. Which seems to indicate that that Nachem paskins like the sugya that says that the Beit HaMikdash L'tid Lavo will come Min HaShamayim, because it's going to come down Be'esh. It's not going to just be, it's not going to be built by man, but it's rather going to come down in a fire from heaven. Rav Reim HaKohen, the Rosh Yeshiva Otniel, once argued that that could be taken allegorically and figuratively, and it could also reconcile with the opinions that say that it's Bidei Adam, but my strong feeling is that that's not the case, and that it's actually subject to Machloket HaRishonim and Machloket HaSugyot, and that the Nachem follows that opinion that says that it will come Latid Lavo Bidei Shemaim, like our Sugya does over here. So that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is actually holding like Rabbi Yehuda. Now Rabbi Yehuda is younger than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's actually a grand Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Talmud is Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus. Rabbi Akiva is a Talmud of Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus. And Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eli is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli, who is obviously much younger, a couple of generations after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So it doesn't mean that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai holds of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli's opinion, but rather Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli's position is reflective of something that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said. Damar, what does Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli say? Mina Torah hu asur. That mina Torah, it's asur all day on the day of the 16th Chadash. Because it says, Ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad itzumo shel yom, until the midst of that day. V'kasavar, ad v'ad bichlal. He holds that when it says, Ad etzem hazeh, does not mean when the day breaks on the 16th, but rather, including the entirety of the day of the 16th. So therefore, he says, how does he reconcile the steer on the psukim? He says, Ad aviyachem et omer, when you bring the omer, that's when the Beit HaMikdash is extant. You can eat chadash after the omer is brought. When the Beit HaMikdash is not there, then you have to wait until the entire day of the 16th passes. Midoraita. Rabbi says, Umi Savarle Kavate? Hamiflag Poligale. What do you mean? How does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai hold like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli? Hamiflag Poligale. He argues on him. Right? Because we have, in the Gemara, Mishachara Beit HaMikdash Itkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Shei Yom Eif Kulu Asur. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted that the entire day of the 16th be Asur. Amalo Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says to him, it's not probably literally that he said to him, but the Gemara is creating as if he spoke to him, Halo mina Torah hu asur? What does he have to make a takana for? It's mina Torah, it's asur. Dichtiv, ara etzem hayom hazeh, ad itzmo shel yom, just like we just learned before. Rabbi says, Rabbi Yehuda hu dekatoi. Rabbi Yehuda was mistaken. Hu sovar midrabonon kamar. He thought Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying this as a din derabonon. Velohi, that's not the truth. Midoraita kamar. He's saying this mina Torah. It says, Vahitkin Kamar. Doesn't it say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai instituted? Instituted sounds like it's a din derabonon. So it says, Mahitkin Dorosh Vahitkin. Hitkin doesn't mean that he instituted, but rather, he was Doresh the Pasuk. He took it back to its core meaning, and that drosha led him to put back the halokha to the original halokha before there was a Beit HaMikdash, which is that it goes all day. It's Osir Chadash all day of the 16th. And when the Mikdash is there, it's Min Omer. And that's what it means, Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It wasn't that he created a takana, Zeichel the Mikdash, but rather he took, that's the core din doraita, and he put it back at that core din doraita. So you have a machloket at Amorim explaining how Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was Hitkin this Yom HaNeif Kulo Asur. Is this all Xerid the Rabbanan because of Zeichel the Mikdash and for the following year? Or is this a din doraita? So Achmer Yitzchak says it's a din doraita. On the other hand, the original position of the Gemara was that it was done Zecher in the Mikdash. Right now we move on to the next Mishnah. Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag Shechal Yot B'Shabbat. When Yom Tov HaRishon falls out on Shabbat, Kol Ha'am Molichim Et Lulavim, the Beit HaKnesset, or whether it's the Beit HaMikdash, they take their Lulavim before Shabbat, because you can't carry the Lulav on Shabbat. The Macharat, the next day, Mashkimim Uvayim Kol Echad V'Echad, everyone comes, Umekir Et Shelo, and he finds his own Lulav. Benot lo, and he takes it. Mipnei sham ruchachamim, ein adam yotzei yidei chovato b'yom tov rishon b'lulavo shel chavero. Because you can only be yotzei with your own lulav when it comes to the first day of Sukkot, and therefore you have to find your own lulav. V'shayim otachag adam yotzei yidei chovato b'lulavo shel chavero. But for the remainder of the 6 days of Sukkot, it does not have to be yours, it can belong to someone else. You can borrow a lulav and be yotzei the mitzvah of lulav. V'yosi omer yom tov rishon shel chag shechal yot b'shabbat. If the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbat, v'shachach v'otziyat lulav v'shut harabim, and by accident he forgets, and he carries the lulav out into the shut harabim, meaning it's a violation of Shabbat, patur. He is patur from a korban chatat for the violation of Shabbat, mipnei sh'otziyo b'rishut, because he took it out with permission, not literally with permission, but what we call torah b'mitzvah or tal b'mitzvah. He was involved and engrossed in another mitzvah, and that caused him to make a mistaken judgment, and he carried out the lulav. He was engrossed or engaged in the mitzvah of lulav, and then because of that, he forgot and he carried on Shabbat. And then because of that, he's protected from being a chatat because he was engaged in the mitzvah. So sugya that we saw in Rabbi Elazar de Mila, and we'll see in tomorrow's daf as well. So now, menahani mile. How do you know that on the first day you have to own your own lulav? The Tanu Banan v'lakachtem shetehei likicha biyad kol echad ve'echad. First of all, this is a principle that we've seen in the Torah many times, that when the Torah uses the plural form, it means that the obligation devolves upon every individual and not on the tzibur bichlal. If it's written in the singular form, then it means that Klal Yisrael as a klal is obligated to ensure that this mitzvah is accomplished. But when it's written in the plural, it means that every individual is obligated in bringing it. So over here it says lakachtem lachem, similar to what it says by the Omer, usfartem lachem, by Sfira l'kol echad v'echad, everybody has to count the Omer. So over here, lakachtem lachem means l'kicha l'kol echad v'echad, every individual has to take the lulav. That's number one. Then it says lachem, misha lachem, it has to be yours. So et a sha'ov, et a gazul, that comes to exclude something that's borrowed or stolen. Mikan amru chachamim, from this chachamim learned, en adam yotzei yudei chavato b'yom t'rishon shechag b'luvo shel chaviro, ilim kein no lo b'matana. The only way you can utilize someone else's lulav on the first day is he gives you it as a gift, because then you have full ownership over it. If you don't have ownership over it, you can't be yotze with that lulav, because it says, v'lakachlem lachem, and that's modified by Yom HaRishon. So only on the first day do we have this halacha. On the other 6 days, this halacha doesn't apply, and therefore you don't have to have that ownership for the other 6 days. So, umayse, v'Rabbi Gamliel, v'Rabbi Yeshua, v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, there are a number of these incidents in Shas, where they talk about these Rabbanon being on a boat and things happening. Shayu Baim Bisfina. They were coming on a boat. Ulay Elulav El Rabban Gamliel. The only one who had Ulav was Rabbi Gamliel. Bilvad. Shalakho be Elev Zuz. He paid 1,000 zuz for this. Extremely expensive Lulav. Not to low Rabbi Gamliel be Yotzebo. Rabbi Gamliel took the Lulav and was Yotz in the midst of Lulav. Not to know the Rabbi Yeshua be Matana. And then he gave it as a gift to Rabbi Yeshua. Not to low Rabbi Yeshua be Yotzebo. Rabbi Yeshua then took it and was Yotze with it. Vinatano, the Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. And he gave it to Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah after him. Vimatana as a gift. Natlo, he took it. Natlo, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah took it. Viyatzebo, and he was Yotze the mitzvah. Natano, Vimatana, the Rabbi Akiva. And then he gave it as a gift to Rabbi Akiva. Natalo, Rabbi Akiva, Yatzebo. Rabbi Akiva took the lulav and was Yotze in it. Vikzero, the Rabbi Gamliel, and he gave it back to Rabbi Gamliel, the original owner. So, Lamanli, the Maimar, Yakzero. Why does it say that he returned it to him? Milta gavorche kamashmalon. It comes to teach us another din, which is matana menat achzir shma matana. That the gift that Rabbi Gamliel gave here was a conditional gift. He gave it on condition that you return it to him. So now matana menat achzir, is that considered to be a real gift? When you give somebody something and saying that I want it returned afterwards, does that count as a gift? Kia adam arova ha'elacha yitrog zeh amenat shetachziru li. If your person gives an etrog on condition that you return it, Natlo v'yatzebo, you can take it, be yotze in it, ekziro yatza. If you gave it back, then you yotze. Lo ekziro, lo yatza. If you don't give it back, then you're not yotze. Meaning that the condition is a part of the condition in ownership. He says to you, you can have it as long as you give it back to me. So if you fulfill the condition of giving it back, then it was yours for the period of time before you gave it back. It was yours, you can be yotze the mitzvah. If you do not return it to the original owner, then you haven't fulfilled the condition, and he didn't grant it to you in those conditions. Then it's not yours. If it's not yours, you can't be yotze. This is what we call a matana al menat lachzir. It's a gift on condition that you return the gift afterwards. And what the Gemara says here is that's a full-fledged gift. Tosafot discusses some of that issue over here. What do you mean it's a full-fledged gift? What can you do with it at that time? What type of ownership do you have? Can you make it kodesh? Can you be makdish it at that time? Tosva gives one answer as yes, you can be makdish at the time. For the time that you own it, you can be makdish it. When you give it back to the original owner, then the kodesh goes away. The other answer he gives is that being able to makdish it is not a siman that you own it. It was in a specific case in the Darim where they required that. But over here, the fact that you can utilize it during that time and be yotz in the midst with it, he's giving you the ability to utilize it and get hanah from it. That's enough of an ownership that you can be yotz in the midst with. And then when you return it to him, it goes back to being his. We discussed this sugya more extensively in the Gemara in Baba Batra, and Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin in Baba Batra, when we had the issue of Matana Menat L'Achzir. Tosfot also notes over here, which is an important part of the sugya, is that when a shul buys lulav and etrog for the community as a whole, that it's important that everybody has in mind that they are gifting their portion of it to whoever is doing the mitzvah at that time. Since they have my etrog ha-shutafim, or lulav etrog shel-shutafim, is not in, you're not yotze with it. That's not enough ownership for you to be yotze. You have to have sole ownership over the item. So here where it's a joint ownership of the whole community, you wouldn't be yotze in the mitzvah. But what do we say? We say no, that the community buys it with the intent that any person who takes it can be yotze the mitzvah because it'll be his entirely during that period. It's basically a matana menachdak zir. You take it from the community, it's yours at that time, and when you put it back, you're giving it back to everybody's ownership, you're granting all their ownership back, and same for each person who comes along to take the lulav. And Tosfot says, even if not everybody says it, minastam, that's why they bought it this way, and that's what they intended. And therefore, that's enough that if the community buys it jointly, that we assume that that's what's happening in this case. Now the Gemara wants to know, why did the Breita tell us, Amdei Meimash Lachob Elev Zuz? Why did he have to tell us that he paid 1,000 zuz for the lulav? To show you how precious mitzvot were in their eyes, that he's willing to spend 1,000 zuz to buy lulav. My father used to daven with the lulav. Meitave, the Eskimara says, wait a minute, we have a Tanaic source that says you can't do this. The Sefer Torah becheiko beitzpalel. A person can't be holding tefillin in his hand or holding a Sefer Torah and daven because the problem is that he's going to be afraid of dropping it and that's going to take him away from concentrating on tefillah. V'lo yishtin behen ma'im v'lo yishan behem lo shinat keva lo shinat arai. You can't go to the bathroom while holding these items and you can't go to sleep while you're holding these items. Not a nap, not a full night's sleep because you're always afraid that you're going to drop them and that'll be a bizayon for these items. Amar Shmuel, that's not only true by Kitvei HaKodesh and by items that are Kodesh, but it's true of any item. Even Sakin Vikara, if you have a knife, a sharp knife, or a kara, a serving dish full of food, Kikar, a loaf of bread, ma'ot, or monies, Harielu Kiyotzeben, they have the same din, because all these items you're worried about dropping or doing damage to yourself, and because of that, you're not going to focus on Shmon Esrei, so you're not allowed to hold these things while you're davening Shmon Esrei. Why don't we say the same thing by lulav and etrog? The guy's going to be afraid to drop it, and it's going to ruin his kavana. Hatam lav mitzvah ninu. Since those items are not a mitzvah, vitorid behu. Therefore, he is worried about dropping them. Hocha be mitzvah ninu lo torid behu. But over here, since they're a mitzvah, you're not worried about them. As Rashi says over here, mitoch shechaviva mitzvah lav. Because the mitzvah is so beloved to you, ein mas'a b'shimura kaved alav. Then the guarding of it and the holding of it is not so burdensome because you feel excited, you're happy to have them in your hands, it's as if it's nothing. So therefore, kaved alav lo tarid, and he's not bothered by it. So because you're engaged in a mitzvah, and that feeling, that sense of joy of doing the mitzvah, takes away the worry of dropping it or worrying about and distracting you from the davening. So that's why it's connected to the previous piece that we said here, that Rabbi Gamliel spent 1,000 zuz for his lulav because chaviven min mitzvot. So do Rashi claims over here. That's the same reason over here. Since the mitzvah is chaviva alav, therefore lo tari b'lo. Tanya, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Tzadok Omer. Kach haya minagam shalein shei Yerushalayim. This was the practice of the people in Yerushalayim. Adam yotzei mibato v'lulav el biyado. Person leaves his house and he took his lulav with him. Olech the Beit Knesset lulav el biyado. Goes to the shul, his lulav's with him. Kore kriyat shma mitpalel v'lulav el biyado. He reads kriyat shma idav and shmon estre. He's holding his lulav. If he's reading the Torah, or he's duchening, he puts it down on the ground because he can't hold him. For the Torah, because he has to roll the Torah, he needs both hands. And for nisiat kapayim, he needs both hands, so therefore he has to put it down. If he goes to visit the sick, or to pay a shiva call, he takes his lulav with him. Nichnas the Beit HaMidrash, when he goes into the Beit HaMidrash, Meshager lulavo biyad bino biyad avdo, u biyad shlucho, gives his lulav over to his child, to his eved, to his emissary, and they take it back home for him. So Rashi says over here, why by the Beit HaMidrash has he not taken it? Because tarid bishmaito vipo miyado. There he's going to be so engrossed in his learning, he might drop it. So there it might be a distraction, because he'll be so engrossed in the learning, it'll drop and he won't know about it. So there we worry about it and he sends it off. And all these other items, you're allowed to carry the lulav around. And actually, we see here that chavivin ha-mitzvot, that the mitzvah was so beloved to the people of Yerushalayim, that they were so excited they took the lulav around with them to do all these other mitzvot. They engaged in their whole day's activities carrying around the lulav. And so what is that, Micah Mashmalan? What does it teach us? Lo diacha kama hayuz rizim b'mitzvot. How to show the type of alacrity they had in performance of the mitzvot, the excitement, the chavivin, ha-mitzvot. And again, it's a Musar Askel for us about how excited we should be about the opportunity to do mitzvot, the opportunity to take advantage of each moment in time and each moed when we have those mitzvot that come to us. One small note here is that the Gemara over here says that they took the lulav and went to be menachem avelim, which is very interesting because there's no avelut on Yom Tov. Since there's no Yom Avelut on Yom Tov or on the Rego on Chol HaMoed, who are they going to be Menachem Avelim for? So this is a strong support for the Balei HaTosafot who argue on the Rambam. The Rambam says that when the Gemara says that there is an Avelut Berego, there is no Rego, there's no Avelut whatsoever. It's wiped out completely. That means it's not Avelut for Hesia, not Avelut Bitzina. We're going to get to the Gemara in Moed Katan. There the Balei HaTosafot argue that even though there's no Avelut for Hesia, there is Avelut Bitzina. So there is a manifestation of Avelut on Chol HaMoed or on Yom Tov, but it's subverted to the Simchat HaYom Tov, but it's still there, it's still underlying. So over there, at least you could explain what it means to have Nichum Avelim. According to the Rambam, it would be very hard to explain it. And based on that, the Shibolei Aleket says that even though there's no obligation to be Menachem Avelim on Chol HaMoed on Yom Tov, one can voluntarily do it because they're still engaged in Avelut. Again, at least Avelut Mitzina. And therefore would be permitted to be Menachem Avelim. On the other hand, the Rambam might hold like the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi quotes the same Braita without Nichum Avelim in it. And if you don't have Nichum Avelim in it, that would make more sense according to all opinions, but especially according to the Rambam who says that there is no Avelut whatsoever on Yom Tov, the Yerushalmi would be support for that position that Nichum Avelim is completely eliminated when it comes to the din of Yom Tov, and therefore there'd be no reason for that to be carrying the lulav and to go be Menachem Avelim. Okay, we'll stop over here.